On my recent open line for topic and guest suggestions, we heard from a listener who said, do something on the future of the electric car. Something that is in the news today with the big three automakers before Congress again promising to make more of them. Electric cars, that is, if they get bailout money. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 7 on this Thursday, December the 4th. We will welcome in two guests to talk with you about the future of the electric car, and we will wonder, will you buy an electric car? And are the big three proposing to build enough of them in the plans they are presenting to Congress in return for $34 billion in loans? Let me welcome first Charles Griffith. He is the Clean Car Campaign Director for the Ecology Center based in Ann Arbor. Good morning.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Thanks a lot for being with us. And also joining us, Bill Moore, founder and publisher of EVWorld.com, a website about electric vehicles. Good morning to you.
Well, good morning to you, too. Thank you for having me.
I understand you are in Washington, D.C. right now.
I am just a few blocks from the Capitol, and at about 8:45, I got to go roaring off over to the Senate office building for the three-car parade of General Motors vehicles with Rick Wagner showing up to testify to Congress. They're going to be driving up in a Volt and a couple of their hydrogen Equinoxes. So I was advised by Tony Posowitz, who runs the Volt program, Bill, you need to be there. So,
I see. So they're making it a dog and a electric car show.
Yeah, a dog and a electric pony show. Yes.
Oh, there we go. So the GM is going to Wagner's going to drive up in the Volt that they're promising to build more of these Volts in a couple years.
Yeah, I had an interesting experience yesterday as I was leaving. There's an electric car conference going on here now in D.C., which is coincidental. Nobody planned it that way; it just happens to have worked out that way. And so as I was leaving the exhibit hall, I actually saw the Volt drive off, which kind of surprised me because I thought this was just a static model, a styling model that they had, but it actually moved. And then Tony said, we're going to be driving it from our local offices here in D.C. over to the office building for the hearings, and we think you ought to be there. So it actually works and runs. So,
well, I sure appreciate you joining us. Until then, we'll let you go in time to get over there. Charles Griffith, is good news to you that these big three are promising to make more electric cars in order to get some money to keep operating?
Well, I'd like to correct maybe one misperception. That I don't think that they're promising to make these vehicles just to get the money. That these were pretty much already in their product pipeline. They're making them commitments as part of the package to get additional loan money. I mean, I think what a lot of people didn't realize is how much was really on their on their planning plate already. And so what they're doing essentially is sort of clarifying to the Congress and to all those interested in why the Detroit automakers should get any money, exactly what they have planned to do, and to put those in writing so that they could be held accountable to them if need be.
Well, so whether it was that they were planning on or were forced to do it sooner, is this is good for the country, for the environment?
Oh, absolutely. I think most experts agree today that electrification of our transportation system over some time, it's not going to happen overnight, but it is a good thing. We need to clean up our power grid at the same time, but the vision of clean power and clean automobiles is still out there, and I think it's a good thing that we can't start moving toward it quick enough.
Yeah, Bill Moore. Besides GM's Volt, what are the other automakers planning when it comes to electric vehicles?
Well, you've got Ford, of course, which has actually announced this week that they are going to be rolling out an all-electric car rather than just a hybrid car sometime, I think, around 2011. So they have that in their works. You've got smaller players like Mitsubishi, which had one of their electric cars here for the ride and drive session that, although I didn't get there in time to actually drive it, I've driven the car over in Tokyo, so... but they've got a wonderful little four-passenger electric car they're going to start selling in Japan next year, with plans at some point a few years after that for North American sales, if they think the market is mature enough for it. So you've got them. You've got Chrysler, who at the L.A. Auto Show that I was at a week and a half ago, had four electric cars, which were essentially conversions of existing vehicles, but they had four of them there. So you're starting to see a real shift in emphasis. And, of course, then Nissan has said that ultimately Nissan is going to be only building electric cars. So you've got this real shift that's starting to take place within the last, 18 months or so, that, whereas was pointed out that we're seeing an increasing electrification of the transportation system.
We are talking about the future of the electric car because you asked us to do so in a recent open line, and because the big three automakers are in Washington again today on Capitol Hill talking about their future plans when it comes to fuel-efficient cars and electric cars. 1-800-642-1234, our toll-free number if you have a question about the pros and cons or the viability of electric cars. Can you see yourself in one? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 4th. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll welcome in Democratic U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, Russ Feingold. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we'll talk with Senator Feingold about his efforts to restore the rule of law in this country. Find out more about that coming up after 8 o'clock. Right now, we're talking about electric cars. Not who killed the electric car, but how the electric car is being revived. The big three automakers are back before Congress today looking for $34 billion in loan money. The plans being presented before Congress include electric cars as well as other fuel-efficient cars, and the plans in the future to build more of these. We're talking with two advocates of electric cars, two experts on electric cars. Charles Griffith is Clean Car Campaign Director for the Ecology Center based in Ann Arbor, and Bill Moore is founder and publisher of EVworld.com, a website about electric vehicles. Let's go right to the phone since our lines are busy. And Mark in McHenry, Illinois is our first caller. Hi, Mark. You're on the air.
Hi. I have a question that has always troubled me about electric cars. I just spent 20 minutes trying to get one of my two vehicles unfrozen so that I could get in and then spend 10 minutes warming it up. My question is, do these cars have heaters in them? And if they do, what does that do to the range? If I turn on my heat in this hideous climate that we live in Wisconsin and Illinois, does that mean I go from 40 miles a range in a volt to 10?
So who wants to handle that one?
Oh, I'd be happy to handle that one. That's a great question. First of all, how far do you drive in the morning when you work?
30 miles.
30 miles, okay. The cars... that I haven't actually talked to them about what their plans are with respect to the heating and air conditioning system on the Volt, but I assume that they will make it so that it will not impact the range. It may, in fact, what will happen is they may have the internal combustion engine and turn on a little sooner. So that's a good question. I can certainly ask the engineering people what their plans are with respect to that. In an all-electric car, there are what we call neighborhood electric vehicles, put out, for example, by a company called Miles, and they've actually sold a number of those cars into Alaska as well as into Montana. In fact, I had dinner just the other night with a gentleman that drives one of these little neighborhood electric cars in Bozeman, Montana, and he was telling me that basically his car works fine. He immediately gets heat out of it. The range is impacted, but the way he handles that is he has a battery heating blanket, if you will, that keeps the batteries warm. And he was telling me that his range, once he does that, his range is not at all impacted by the climate up in Bozeman, which I'm guessing is probably similar to where you are in Wisconsin. So as long as you've got a, you know, the car has to be obviously plugged in at night anyway, and you've got a battery heating, you know, pack for it, the car should not be impacted, you know, in the range as you're driving it during the wintertime.
I was reading an article that says that this might, more electric cars might result in a lot of changes being made in terms of infrastructure, in terms of I can plug my car in overnight. I have a house with a garage. But what about people that live in apartments or park on the streets? Or what about when you're traveling and you're going to be at a hotel or, you know, you're going to have a long-distance trip? It's going to mean some changes, won't it, Bill?
Yeah, certainly. And there's actually companies that are doing that. There's a company here that General Motors has partnered with called Colum Technology, and that's their model. You know, they realize that there are going to be a lot of people that are apartment dwellers, condo dwellers, people that are going to be driving and going to a hotel, you know, that are going to need that. So they're developing a business plan to actually install that infrastructure. In fact, they had an announcement during the show here that they had added distributors in something like 28 states here in the country. So, yeah, there are people that see that as a business opportunity. There are, as a matter of fact, hotels around the San Francisco area where the Tesla car is being manufactured that have actually already installed charging systems for their guests who will eventually get Teslas, and they hope come stay at their hotel. So they're making provisions for that, just as, you know, you saw the growth of the Internet, where, you know, it was only just a handful of hotels started to have Internet. Well, you can't go to a hotel now that doesn't have Internet. You know, I'm here in a hotel in D.C., and my Internet access is, you know, wireless, high-speed, you know, and that's just the norm. That's what you expect anymore. So I think you're going to see somewhat, as the cars begin to come into the market, you're going to see people respond to that as a business opportunity, just like Colum Technologies has.
Our next caller is Lou in West Union, Iowa. Hi, Lou. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. My wife and I have been interested for some time in the lack of being thorough in analyzing the electric vehicles, in that people are talking about getting a lot of miles per gallon, for instance, with the Volt, and as if plugging it in was free. And it isn't free. I don't know what it'll cost to do that. I won't let people plug it into my place for free because I don't know how much it was going to cost. Also, indirectly, the environment, the cost goes back on the environment in a way that these coal-fired plant electrical plants are generating electricity, and that ought to be talked about as well.
Well, we wanted to talk about that, Lou. I'm glad you called. That's a good one for you to tackle, Charles Griffith.
I'll listen.
Yeah, I'd love to jump in. You're absolutely right that it's not free. The reason, though, that it ends up looking favorable, though, is in part because the efficiencies of electric propulsion. There's less waste heat that's generated from the operating the vehicle itself, and it's an advantage that electric vehicles have over, you know, more traditional internal combustion engines. That efficiency, you know, gives it the equivalent of, and the use of energy gives it the equivalent of, you know, roughly double the sort of fuel economy, if you were, energy efficiency of a traditional gasoline vehicle. Now, it differs somewhat based on the power grid that you're plugging into. Obviously, if you're in, you know, on a grid that's got a lot of sort of older and less efficient coal plants, the profile is not going to look as good as if you're in a power grid where there's a fair amount of use of renewable energy or other clean sources of energy or more modern power plants that that generate that electricity more cheaply.
What about the environmental costs, though? Are we going to be spewing a lot of dirty coal fumes into the air in order to power our cars?
Again, that sort of goes back to the comment I made at the beginning, which is, you know, this is not going to happen overnight. Obviously, if we placed millions of plug-in hybrid vehicles on the grid overnight, you would see some increased emissions associated with that large influx of vehicles. But what's more likely to happen is that the growth will happen slowly at first. We're all, from the environmental point of view, we're all working very diligently on trying to clean up our power grid. If you think of a trajectory of cleaning up the power grid and the transportation system at the same time, in sort of concert, then I think, you know, you see a projection which leads to less emissions overall as we move forward on both fronts. So I wouldn't say that there's no reason for concern, but I would suggest that the growth of plug-in and electric vehicles will likely happen slow enough that we have time to sort of clean up the grid and reduce the concerns about significant increases in pollution. And there are some trade-offs. Some of the studies that have been done looking at sort of the comparisons suggest there could be some increase in, for example, NOx emissions from power plants while you're reducing the CO2 and other emissions from the automobile tailpipe. And they don't equate one for one, but overall we've done a lot to sort of clean up the air emissions. They're the conventional pollutants from automobiles in our traditional gasoline engines, but we've done a lot less to clean up the CO2 emissions that come from the just the energy consumption side of it. And we really need to make bigger gains there. And I think that some trade-offs along the way may be worth pursuing, because we really need to, to address climate change and work on that side of the equation.
Allow me, if you would, jump in here on this.
Just 30 seconds before
a
news break.
The gentleman's question with respect to free, and I'm not going to let anybody plug in and take electricity for free. Actually, there's a gentleman that I met here at the conference who is developing technology that would allow you as the business owner or even as a homeowner to charge the person that comes over to and know how much that person's electricity they're going to be using. So again, somebody else looking at a potential business opportunity in this model. Even with our current power mix of about 50% coal on a national average, the emissions that...
I'm sorry, I need to jump in because we have a news break coming up, and we will talk more about the buzz about electric cars coming up after this news. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. The CEOs of Ford, GM, and Chrysler are asking for $34 billion in taxpayer-financed loans and are before Congress again today explaining the changes that they will make in the future and their plans to spend that money. They have promised to invest in clean technologies and accelerate the development of fuel-efficient vehicles. Ford is promising a battery-powered electric van available to commercial fleets in 2010, followed by an electric sedan a year later. GM promises to change its production mix of over the next 4 years and launch predominantly high-mileage, energy-efficient cars and crossovers. GM points to its Chevy Volt, a fully electric car that is scheduled for production in 2010. By 2012, GM promises to offer 15 hybrid models. Chrysler promises an all-electric, full-function car by 2010 and three more by 2012. So, Do you like these plans when it comes to electric car manufacturing, or do you have any doubts or concerns? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine talking with two guest experts about the future of the electric car. Charles Griffith is Clean Car Campaign Director for the Ecology Center based in Ann Arbor, and Bill Moore is founder and publisher of EVWorld.com, a website about electric vehicles. And Bill Moore is in Washington today for a conference on electric vehicles and is kind of watching what's happening on Capitol Hill. Bill Moore, what is your I had to cut you off before our newscast, but maybe you can talk a little bit about what it is, your vision of the future for the electric car. Do you see this quickly catching on, or is it going to take a long time?
Well, I think it's, first of all, I agree with Charles that it's going to happen gradually over some time. And it has to do with a number of different factors. The largest factor, I think, just simply being the necessary support infrastructure. And, you know, we have a automobile supplier network that has essentially been built around the internal combustion engine. And there just are not a lot of suppliers at this point in time that provide the necessary components for some of these vehicles. For example, in the case of the Volt, the General Motors found that when they started designing the Volt and going out and looking for suppliers for various components to go on the car that were required, they found that globally there were maybe two at most of some of these suppliers. So there has to be a redevelopment of that network. There also has to be a greater expansion of the battery network, because really an electric car, that's the heart of the car. It always has been. It's been the huge advantage of the car and the bane of the electric car, since the days of Thomas Edison. So we have to have that. You know, you take a look at the United States, and there is, you know, virtually no production capacity. You can count on one hand the number of companies in the United States that actually make the batteries and make the cells that compose the batteries and things like that. So that all has to take place over time. And also, because the technology is so new, none of the car makers want to just rush right into this and turn out, millions of these vehicles, because they still have to get comfortable with the technology. We've had 100 years to perfect the internal combustion engine. And through fits and starts, the electric car has risen and fallen for the last century and enjoyed brief respites during energy crisis. But quickly faded with gas prices as they dropped. So this is technology that they want, for their own company's health and of course for customer satisfaction purposes. They want to go slowly. So I agree with Charles, it's going to take time. But you see all kinds of indications globally where countries are talking about, for example, Ireland says we're going to have a 250,000 electric cars on our roads by 2020. Now, that's not all that far off. We're talking 12 years. So there's very ambitious plans globally being stated by car companies and by countries and cities that are getting involved with this. But it is going to take time, definitely.
Let me take another caller, Scott in Onalaska. Hi, Scott.
Hi, good morning. Wonder if your guest is it Charles?
Yeah,
we have two guests.
Ever heard of the company? I think it's out of California, Aptera. It's a small company that's manufacturing, I guess, a vehicle right now that is all electric, and in 2010 is going to have a gas electric hybrid that, if you drive within 120 miles range per day, you'll never have to go to the gas station again. Have you heard of that company? Aptera.com is what I looked up.
Either of you familiar
with
that?
Yeah, I'm very familiar with it. Steve Frambo, who founded the company, gave me a very early heads up, and I began to see some of the early computer illustrations of the car. So I'm fairly familiar with the technology, and in my view, it's probably one of the real breakthrough concepts that I've personally seen in electric car development. It's really an exciting vehicle.
Gary in Washburn is with us now. Hi, Gary.
Hi. Listen, I've been driving an electric truck that was made by Ford Motor Company 10 years ago. This is old technology. This was my daily driver. I have 7,000 miles on it. It cost me equivalent to 83¢ a gallon gasoline if I charge it on off-peak electricity at 4¢ a kilowatt hour. This technology could be upgraded. Ford could start up production of these Rangers again and turn them into plug-in hybrids. They just need the will. And if the U.S. government would take and do the right thing here, we would see electric vehicles.
Yeah, aren't we? Are we on the right track, Bill Moore? First,
Definitely. I'm delighted to hear that. Is the Rangers still working good for you? That's great. I mean, there's a long story there about Rangers. We don't obviously have time to it, but I'm sure Ford would be happy to hear that that truck's still performing well with you. There are efforts. There have been efforts actually over in the neighboring over in Minnesota. There's been talk at the Ford plant where they actually make Rangers. To revive the Ford Ranger, and I've seen some early speculation that in fact Ford was considering bringing back the Ford Ranger. I don't know if that's in their new plans now, since they've obviously having to do some belt tightening. But I mean, that car's worked well. There's several hundred of them out there. Ford built about 15,000 of them. 1,500 of them back during the California mandate period. So it does. It works, and there's thousands of people out there who every day, get to and from work or run their errands and things in electric cars that either they themselves have converted for anywhere from $10,000 to $20,000, or have been one of the lucky few like this gentleman to actually get a hold of of one of the Rangers.
Yeah. Any comments on Gary's Ranger?
Yeah, I'd like to jump in. I think I also agree. It's great that your listener is still driving that vehicle, and that he still can drive it, and he wasn't one of those unlucky EV1 drivers that had to turn in their car and see it get crushed in the desert. But I think the problem what it raises is the problem was that the car companies didn't seem to be able to make money on EVs when they first came out, and I think that's the biggest reason that they killed those programs, along with the fact that there wasn't strong public policy that supported those technologies. And what we need is a serious commitment by the federal government in particular to invest. As Bill pointed out, we really need to ensure that there's going to be a battery supply and production based industry in the United States, because one of the things that's not going to be that great for us is if we start shifting from internal combustion engines to battery electric, but then we're importing all of those components and essentially outsourcing the jobs that go along with that new part of the industry. So
Charles,
we need to bring that industry back mm-hmm. into the U.S., and we need public policies to support going in that direction.
We'll talk more about that, Charles. Let me hold you there for now and
yeah.
say goodbye to Bill Moore, who I know has to run over and see the show that the CEOs of the big three are putting on by, what did you say again, Bill Moore? They're going to be driving to
Yeah, well, the
Capitol
GM
Hill?
People, I don't know what Ford has okay. in mind, but I know GM gave me a heads up, and they're going to be coming driving the Volt and the two of their fuel cell Equinox cars over to the from their headquarters here over to the Russell Senate building. So I'm going to charge out the door, grab a cab, and head for Capitol Hill.
Yeah, are you hopeful that the big three will get their money, or do you have thoughts on the bailout plans?
That's more time than I have to to talk, but I'm certainly hopeful. My attitude is that the last thing we need to do is see more of our manufacturing base disappear from this country.
All right. Thank you very much.
We really need to have it. So
thank you so much for being with
okay,
us.
Okay. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Bill Moore is founder and publisher of EVworld.com, a website about electric vehicles. We'll continue talking with Charles Griffith, who is Clean Car Campaign Director for the Ecology Center based in Ann Arbor, Michigan, after we check the weather. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
Now be lit with just
electricity.
You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. 12 minutes before 8 o'clock on this Thursday, December the 4th. Stay tuned. Coming up after the news in our 8 o'clock hour, we will talk with Russ Feingold. U.S. Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin is working on trying to restore the rule of law. We'll find out what that's all about coming up in our next hour. Right now, we're talking about electric cars, and we welcome your questions and your take on electric cars. Are the big three automakers on the right track and promising to build more of them? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our next caller is John in Brussels. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hi. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. You know, it just seems to me that there's such a fundamental flaw in this reasoning here, and that is all of a sudden the big three have made a commitment to build more electric cars, but what we're forgetting, we just heard our guest say this is going to take a long time. So now we've got a situation where the government is going to be giving them millions of dollars, billions of dollars, with the promise to do this. So then what incentive will the government have to fund these other startup companies that could do this much quicker and more efficiently? And the idea is, what are the big three going to do in the meantime while they're taking their time to make sure they have the best car on the market? How are they going to survive selling all the stuff that nobody's wanted to buy in the past? Because we've lost the Made in America nostalgia, basically Made in America in the auto industry. The perception is that you're buying something that's not as good of a product that you could buy from an imported vehicle. So it just doesn't seem that all of a sudden the shift to the government paying this money to these auto companies to implement this car, this product, with the same systems that are in place that make the traditional automobile fail miserably in the American market.
Any comment on that, Charles?
Yeah, a couple of points. I mean, one is that the federal government isn't being asked to pay the automakers to develop these technologies. They're really asking for a loan to make it through a very difficult financial crisis that is facing not only the companies but the countries, and it has particularly hit hard the automobile industry because of the steep decline in sales and the inability of consumers to get loans and you know, the very high costs that it has, that the companies have just to sort of keep the doors open. The federal government has also appropriated up to $25 billion in loans specifically for advanced technologies that is just now sort of being applied for, and any company can apply for that money, including supplier companies. So to your other point, there is separate funding that is not specifically designated for just big three companies, and any firms can apply for that. But, you know, we also, I think, need to this may not be enough, and I know it sounds like a lot of money, but the problem is that the federal government has not really been investing in these technologies like they could and should, and like other countries have done with their automobile sectors. And that's one of the reasons that we're sort of behind. And I think if we want to be competitive and be a competitive manufacturing nation again, we're going to have to really invest in those future technologies and create various public-private partnerships, et cetera. I know some people out there are saying we should nationalize these companies and take them over and tell them what kinds of new products they should build. I don't really see that happening, and not quite sure that it's a great idea for the government to be running companies. They have their own problems. But the concept of, you know, really investing and taking some ownership for the future of this sector does make some sense, and I think that you'll see probably from the Obama administration with the talk about economic stimulus and in guiding that money toward new renewable energy and clean energy projects should and probably will include additional sort of money to develop these technologies, and I think battery technology in particular is one of the areas that we need to invest heavily in.
All right. Thanks to John for the call. Jim in Racine is with us now. Hi, Jim. Jim, are you there?
Oh, yes.
Go ahead, please.
I wanted to point out two things. One is that the overall efficiency of the electric car system is really not as good as some of your guests seem to say. If you consider that the efficiency of electric coal electric plants is like 35 or 40%, then the overall efficiency is maybe 30%. And this is going to put a tremendous load on these coal plants, going to lead to the development of a need for more coal plants. And that's exactly what we don't need, because coal puts more carbon dioxide into the atmosphere than any other fuel. And then there's the other problem is that gasoline is very heavily taxed, and if we start driving our cars with electricity, then these taxes are going to be lost, and they'll have to be recouped in some other way.
Yeah, thanks, Jim, for the call. We did quite a bit of discussion already, Charles, on whether we need to build more coal-fired plants. So maybe briefly a response on that. But what about taxes?
Well, one additional thing about the coal plant is that there's been a study this past year that showed that if you're primarily going to be charging these vehicles at night, that is when we have a lot of additional capacity. And the study suggested that we could actually convert 75% of all of our cars to electricity and power them on the grid using the idle capacity that we have within the system today. Now, you know, to the emissions points, yes, we're not as clean of a power grid as we'd like to be, and so over time that will improve. The taxes issue is already a front and center problem because we have, seen with higher gas prices already a decline in the revenues from the gas tax, which primarily supports transportation, both new roads as well as transit and other forms of alternative transportation projects. And so I don't know if there's a state in the country that isn't sort of dealing with that problem right now, and the federal government certainly is. There's been talk from everything from increasing gas taxes to coming up with other kinds of mechanisms to support transportation. So we're going to have to tackle that issue one way or another.
Thanks to Jim. Chuck in Viroqua, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm concerned about the next vehicle I buy. I've got a 10-year-old Ford 150 pickup, and I'm just holding off buying because I would like to get something that would be use renewable sources. I would like to see you develop something that would recharge distributed generation, so we could have local power stations in our towns and not be dependent on the base load grid. Why isn't more solar? Why aren't these cars being sold with solar power additives, so we can generate our own power right where we live or where we have the car parked?
All right. What about that?
Well, I mean, first of all, the cars generally aren't available yet. So when they do, that is a good suggestion for them. I think the problem is that the car companies aren't really the experts on the distributed energy distribution technologies, but they could certainly partner with companies that are and help make that more easily, make that more easy to happen. We are a supporter of, my organization is a supporter of, policies that make distributed energy generation, easier to do and more affordable for the developers of those technologies. So I support where you're coming from.
And Karen in Managua, hi, go ahead. We're running close to the top of the hour, though.
Okay, hi. I don't think that the federal government should fund the car companies for research for more energy-efficient cars. Over the years, Honda and Toyota have been outselling the American car companies for several reasons, one of which because they do have more fuel-efficient cars. And I just don't think that the federal government should have to do this while GM and Chrysler and everyone else has had the money and the time to be doing this. And also, if we wouldn't we just be going from one energy source to another if we go from gas to coal burning electric?
Yeah. I'm sorry to cut you short there, Karen, but we have less than a minute for a brief response. Charles Griffith.
Well, keep in mind that the Japanese government and other governments have been much more supportive of the technology developments that we're talking about here. And so there's an issue of keeping pace with the other auto sectors around the world. And we're not saying that they should do all the primary research, but we should be hopefully involved as a nation in investing in the development of the basic technologies that we hope the industry will use.
Do you have an opinion on whether the big three should get their money?
Reluctantly, I think we have little choice, that the downsides of them failing and going under are just too huge and will end up costing us way more than if we let them fail. And I also think that they're getting on track. They've made a lot of changes over the last few years, and they have a chance to make it. And we, I think it makes sense to give our domestic companies the chance.
Thank you so much, Charles Griffith, Clean Car Campaign Director for the Ecology Center based in Ann Arbor. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.